Hey, everybody. My guest this week is Jonathan Capehart. Has a new show on MSNBC called The Sunday Show. Also an op-ed columnist for The Washington Post and someone whose work I've always respected. He's interesting, smart, funny, and balanced. And I was really happy to have him on the show. So enjoy that. If you want to see this in video form, we did this as a video interview. It's on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/PaulMercurio, youtube.com/PaulMercurio. So I hope you enjoy it. Hope you have a great new year. Happy New Year. 2021 has to be better than 2020. I'm very excited. It's my late Christmas gift to have my guest on the show. A brilliant writer for the Washington Post, op-ed columnist, serves on the Post's editorial board and has his own show on MSNBC on Sundays from 10 to 12 Eastern time, 10 to 12 every day, every Sunday. The Sunday Show with Jonathan Capehart. Nice to have you, Jonathan. Great to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks so much, Paul. The honor is mine.
I just wish I had a way better background than a yellow wall and this compared to you. Thank you for joining me from Italy, Jonathan.
Yes, virtually.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny, real quick, the Sunday Show reminded me of, I worked on The Daily Show, and I liked the sort of stripped down name of the show, like The Sunday Show. And when they named it The Daily Show, people were like, why'd you name it The Daily Show? Well, we're trying to being a little quick, cute and ironic. And for a while, people just didn't get it. Like The Daily Show was on daily.
Right. Anyway,
I've been a big fan of your writing, and I think you're an important voice, and I always liked your contributor work on MSNBC. So I was really happy to see you get your own show. And having worked on different TV shows, I know one of the biggest things is finding a voice for the show. And I wanted to talk to you about it, at least initially, sort of what do you want to do with this platform in terms of your voice? Because I think you have one of the hardest jobs in television, which is you're at the week's end. The news cycle is over. Nothing really happens on Saturday and Sunday. You have 2 hours to fill, but you're doing it. I've been watching the show, but I'd like for listeners and viewers maybe who have not seen the show yet, like, what are you trying to bring to the table in terms of a voice?
So it goes back to the name of the show. And when they were asking me, the bosses were asking me, so what name would you want? Like, I don't know. Well, what kind of show do you want to do? I said, well, particularly on Sunday, I want to reimagine the traditional Sunday show. 10 to noon, that's in the Sunday show space. So yeah. That's the kind of show I want to do, but I want to do it differently than they're doing it now. And when I'm thinking Meet the Press in the Russert years. And it was appointment television. And from the opening notes of that music, you were in your seat ready because you knew what was coming was going to be worth your time. Mm. So that's the kind of show I was thinking about. And then when they're saying, you know, when you're thinking of a name, the name should tell the viewer what they're going to be watching, what they can expect. And so we're getting, you know, my husband's coming up with names, my mom's coming up with names. And in the middle of the night, it hit me. Well, I'm talking about doing a different kind of Sunday show. Why don't I just call it The Sunday Show? And so I sent it in. I said, what about this? And I don't know, maybe the gods were smiling down upon me. Not only did the bosses like it, but it cleared all those clearance hurdles.
Oh,
that
my God.
To jump.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So here we have a show where the name tells you what kind of show you're going to watch, you're going to see. Then also, I'll push back on your characterization about nothing happens on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, that's true with Trump. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
that's all.
You're
right. That is all gone.
Yeah,
that is completely gone. And so what we're doing is, you know, the show is on Sunday. By Monday, I'm reading the papers and already just sort of thinking, maybe that'll hold until Sunday. Maybe that'll hold until Sunday. And I'm jotting down, tomorrow is Monday. Basically.
Right.
And so I have to hand in my assignment, you know, my ideas for segments and guests, but it's so dynamic that by Saturday is when you really start thinking about, let's nail down what's going to be on the show. Right. And then on Sunday, you could wake up at 5 in the morning and something's happened. and everything is just thrown out of whack.
Yeah.
And then you go into rolling coverage. And so that's what's exciting about my show, is that I'm trying to play in the Sunday show space while also being on top of the news. And then just one more thing, what makes this job fun and a little easier than you would expect. I know the audience that comes to MSNBC from 10 until noon, they're news junkies. Mm. They're news nerds. They know what's going on. They know the headlines. Mm. What they come to MSNBC for, and to my show in those hours, is they want to know what this means. Where does this news fit into the larger story? Mm. Why is it important? And why should I care? And that's what makes the job fun, because then you can take COVID, which is a story that is going to be, we're going to be talking about it every week. But each week it's, okay, where's the story? What are people talking about? What's this funky thing that needs further explanation? Who can we get on to talk about it? Mm. That is, I mean, that's a jigsaw puzzle that is so much fun to do. And the one thing that I have that Tim Russert never had, I've got 2 hours.
Yes. Well, listen, you're doing it. I mean, and you had a really great quote in talking about this. You said, they come to us because they want to know the connection with other big stories, how it fits into the larger coverage. I want everyone to come away with the feeling that they learned something, they were elevated by watching, and worthy of their time. And this is what I really like, respects their intellect, which I feel is not necessarily happening all the time. But this past Sunday, you had Lori Garrett on, and I'm a news junkie, but you're doing it. Congratulations, I think, in what you want to do, because you are bringing attention to angles that maybe haven't been elaborated on in other mediums or other venues, you know. And Lori, you talked about that NPR stat that they quoted at the 1.8 beds in LA for every 1,000 people. And Lori Garrett then talked about why LA spread. One big reason is car transportation. Was utterly fascinating. And for those listening and watching, it basically was, you know, you're in a car with somebody, you're less than 6 feet away, then you go in to visit somebody, and who knows what happened in that car. It's like this moving petri dish. And so you really brought some fresh perspective to a story that's been 24/7 for the last 9 months. I really tip my hat to you, really doing it. So.
Well, thank you. You know, the one other thing, that I do, and I'm mindful of this because I've been hearing this about me for years from people, and that is they like me because I ask questions and then I let the interviewee answer the questions.
Yes.
I let them talk. And then I base my next question off of what they've actually said. So in a lot of ways, and I don't know how quite to articulate this in a soundbite, but sometimes it feels like I am watching television the way people do at home. I'm watching television while doing television.
Yeah.
And so if you as a viewer are sitting and you're watching Lori Garrett, you have no idea where this conversation is going. So you're actually listening to what she's saying.
Right.
And then you're formulating, well, wow, that's really interesting. Well, what about this? Whereas I, as the anchor, you know, traditionally, like, I've got a bunch of questions, right, and I'm ready to go. And some right. anchors, they just go down, okay, that's very nice what you said. I'm going to move on to the next question.
Right, exactly. The person could go, a torpedo just hit the back of my house. So I understand you like pasta. Like, they just, like, right. It's two shifts passing. And you're right. Like, you have this, right? You have your preparation. The person at home doesn't have any preparation.
Right.
So this has to be there, I think, embedded in the back of your mind. Trust that you will pull up what you need to pull up. But you need to be in the moment and listen, because this is what I love about the medium of interviewing, is it's going to go in places you didn't expect.
Right.
Things are going to be and you're doing it because you do ask, you do listen. I mean, look, the other pet peeve of mine, and you don't do this, and I won't mention who does, but the 15-minute question... that needs to really, it's just, I'm going to show you how smart I am. It goes back to, you know, one day there was a schoolyard, and then it just is like, and my wife is like, stop screaming at the TV. Cause I'm like, get to the question. I'm just going nuts. Right. But you're right. Like people aren't dumb. They just want you to sort of be in the same headspace as they are.
Well, you know what, Paul, I don't feel the urge or the need to prove to the audience that I am as smart as the person I've invited on. Mm. If you've written the book, written the legislation, sculpted the piece, painted the painting, choreographed the dance, right, composed the music, built the aircraft, well, you're the one. Let me ask you how you did it. I don't need to prove to the audience that I'm just as smart as you are, or right, let me show you how much I know as much as you. No, the whole reason why you're here is to tell the audience all that right information.
Right.
And that's what makes this job, interviewing people, so much fun.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, let me ask you this, Paul. Do you ever find before doing your own interviews that you don't study up as much as you should, or you think you should?
You know, I don't want to sound whatever. I have to be honest with you. No. I mean, I feel like if the person's going to give me the time, I should put the time in. And, I have found a couple of times that I wanted to talk about something that they didn't seem to want to talk about. And what I wanted to talk about wasn't inappropriate or like something. And so I've had to sort of adjust on the fly a little bit, you know, because you don't want to jam something down somebody's throat as the guest.
Right.
You know,
well, I mean, I asked that question and you're right. I mean, there's preparation and then there's preparation. Yeah. But sometimes I will see something while I'm preparing and I won't dive way into it.
Oh, that? Yes.
Because sometimes it's better not to know, so that when you do ask the question, you are genuinely surprised by the answer you get back.
Yeah, and yes, absolutely. Yeah,
that just makes for a much better, more real, more human conversation. Right.
And the other thing is, you can't try to trick your guest. Like, I had Billy Bob Thornton on, and he wanted to talk about his music. Okay, now, he's really known for his acting. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll talk about his music. Because I don't really care. I'm a process geek. So I'm interested in, especially creative people like yourself, like, how do you get to your place of what you do so well? So the creative core, the soul of your creation, whether it manifests itself in music or in writing or in acting, it's still emanates from the same place. Mm-hmm. So it didn't matter to me. So we're talking about music and this and that, we're joking around. And then he said to me, and I'm not patting myself on the back, he goes, I just want you to know, this is like one of the better interviews anybody's ever done. I go, why? He goes, well, because you're actually talking to me about what I want to talk about. Like, I want to talk about music. He goes, you know, recently I got asked what kind of omelet I think Bruce Springsteen eats. Someone actually asked me that in an interview. And you can, like, so you can imagine, right? Like, you're on the other side of that and they're doing a tour of like whatever they're doing that day of 15, you know, media outlets. And it's really simple. Like, like you said, get your ego out of the way. Give your guests the opportunity to sort of be themselves and talk about what they want to talk about. Cause it's really about the connection and your viewers connecting with you. And I really do think you're an important voice. I mean, your writing, your op-ed writing, that piece you did on Peggy Noonan and Jared Kushner.
Oh,
by the way, can I just do this? When you said to Rudy Giuliani, what happened to you in September? I was like, this guy's awesome. Like, that was what I could say. I lived in New York when he was the mayor, and while he was like kind of psychotic and so on, he was a solid mayor. And then he just went crazy. Like, I don't know what happened to the guy.
You know, I feel a sense of responsibility in this job. I mean, I've always been an opinion writer. Mm. I did have a like 7-8 months where I tried to be a news side reporter and, you know, journalist, and that didn't go so well. So, and so when your job is to be a reporter, but then you have the privilege of saying what you actually think about things, that comes with a lot of responsibility. And so when you're someone like me who has staked out a position on social issues, cultural issues, racial issues, when something happens where you are offended, or people in positions of influence or power are writing things that are obnoxious or racist, or they should know better, especially when they are people who are constantly wagging their fingers at other people, that I feel duty bound to say, hold up, wait a minute. Here's how you're wrong. Here's why you're wrong. And with Mayor Giuliani, talk about preparing for an interview. At first I was like, oh my God, there are all these things I got to think about. And then I thought, you know what? No, I'm going to focus only on the indictment of this guy who the Treasury Department says is a Russian asset who worked directly with Rudy. And I'm just going to focus on that. Yeah. And the only thing I need to worry about is, which Rudy am I going to get? Solicitous Rudy or psychotic Rudy? And what ended up happening was I got solicitous Rudy.
You did. That's what blew me. I thought he was going to blow. Like, you know, when you say something to your father, you think he's going to lose it. Instead, he goes the other way. Like, I thought he was just like, well, what do you mean? And I was like, what did they, did Jonathan put something in his water? Like, why isn't he going crazy, Rudy?
He was trying to, oh, well, you covered me all these years. You know me, Jonathan. You've covered me all these years. And that was my opening. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? You are right. I've been covering you for almost 30 years. And you know what? What happened to you? You're spinning conspiracy theories and trying to overturn an election. What happened to you, Rudy?
I know.
Yeah. And, you know, and I ask that question because there are a lot of New Yorkers who I've been in touch with who have been asking that question for months now. Yeah. And so I figured, why not ask him? But you know what, Paul, the one thing, because you're in the moment and you think you're going to say all these things, but you don't. And so the one thing that I wish I had said after what happened to you, I wish I had said to him, Rudy, you do know old Rudy, 1980s Rudy would have arrested 2020. You do know that.
That would have been awesome.
Of course, you think of the best line when you're done, every time.
Listen, I know you have to go. I'm going to put you on the spot. I want to have you on again. There's so much I want to talk about. There's your writing. I want to talk about the Peggy Noonan piece. I want to talk about the piece you did on Jonathan Metzl's book. So, the show, you're really hitting it, and I know how hard that is. 2 hours to fill and. Find your voice, and I really impressed that you hit the ground running. So congratulations and much success with the show. It's 10 to 12 every Sunday. It's called The Sunday Show, in case people can't remember. By the way, my show, Lame, the Paul Mercurio show, we went through the same thing. At one point I was two chairs and a microphone, and people like didn't quite get that. And I'm like, I just haven't been good at coming up with a pithy name. So we workshopped it for 6 months and we came up with the Paul Mercurio show. But anyway,
Paul, thank you. Thank you so much for your compliments and your encouragement. And anytime, invite me back. This was fun.
Yeah, let's do it again. We'll arrange it and we'll find some time. Maybe you could be in a different part of the world next time, maybe like the Sahara Desert behind you or something like that.
I only put up backdrops of places where I've been. So maybe next time Santorini. I'll put up Santorini.
Oh, I want to just say the byline you did this past Sunday, where you showed your passport and you poured in your plant, was so relatable. That's what you're doing. You're really, like, it was so real. Like, you're putting things in a way. It's so hard what you're doing because it's every day. Like, we had this at the Daily Show with Clinton and the impeachment. It was like, what is the angle? What are we going to, I can't think about this anymore. I don't want to think, I have nothing left in me to say about this thing. And you're doing it, but you're bringing a fresh perspective up. So folks should go and online, see that show, see your other shows, and start watching regularly. So good luck with everything.
Thanks, Paul.
Great to have you.